Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the Supreme Court is expected to hand down decisions in two cases involving voluntary school desegregation that some activists fear will overturn, effectively, Brown versus Board of Education, believe it or not, which turned 53 1 week ago today. Columbia University and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund are co-sponsoring a program tonight on the future of diversity in education, and we're joined now by three of the participants. Columbia President Lee Bollinger, who as president of the University of Michigan was named in two other cases that went to the Supreme Court over the issue of racial preferences in higher education, Harvard Law professor and civil rights scholar Lonnie Guinier, and Ted Shaw, who as head of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, argued the two cases currently awaiting decision. He joins us briefly first by cell phone. Welcome back to WNYC. Let's see. I know Lonnie Guinier, it's welcome back, and Lee Bollinger, it's welcome back. Ted Shaw, is it welcome back?
Well, I wish it were. I've been waiting to get on your show for a long time. I'm a big fan.
Well, I'm glad you did. And tell us about the two cases that you argued before the Supreme Court in December and why some fear they will overturn, in effect, Brown versus Board of Education.
Well, sadly, when you say that we argued, we did ask for argument time, but there was no representation on the part of African-American students or students of color during the oral arguments. Part of the posture of these cases, so-called reverse discrimination cases, is you get a white plaintiff suing an institution, and in the natural course of events, unless there's intervention, you don't get black folks or people of color involved, even though their interests are most at stake. The two cases come out of Louisville, Kentucky, and Seattle, Washington, and we were litigating amicus in the Louisville case and amicus in the Seattle case, and they involve the question of whether voluntary school integration is going to be constitutional in this country. Voluntary school integration methods are about all that's left of Brown versus Board of Education. And even though the country claims to honor Brown in practice, we really, in principle rather, we don't really honor it in practice. School segregation is ubiquitous, and many school districts that desegregated in the years following Brown, after long struggle, have resegregated with the acquiescence or the approval of the Supreme Court and other federal courts. The larger issue here is an ideological struggle about whether it's going to be constitutional and legal in this country to do anything voluntarily about racial inequality, because our adversaries claim that race consciousness equals racism. What that means is that programs to get black folks, Latinos, people of color, into PhDs, into the sciences, math, scholarship programs, pipeline programs into corporate America, even programs to address this this crisis among young black men and boys, those programs are all targeted programs, and our adversaries would say that those are illegal or unconstitutional. That is a perversion of the concept of colorblindness in a way that stands facts on their heads and perverts the civil rights legacy.
So, Lee Bollinger, would a ruling against the school districts in these cases, that is striking down voluntary affirmative action, require overturning the case that you were involved in, known as Grutter versus Bollinger?
It could. It's possible. It depends, of course, upon the rationale that the court, majority of the court, would use. And so we don't know what the answer to that will be. You know, in the case that I was involved in, that the majority of the Supreme Court upheld the authority of universities across the country to consider race as one factor in admissions, that case was a continuation of the efforts coming out of Brown in 1954 to try to rectify several centuries of really terrible discrimination against African Americans and Hispanics and Native Americans in the country. But it was also an affirmation of the educational policy or choice, again, of universities throughout the United States, public and private, that in order to really educate young people for the modern world, you have to give them a diverse student body and a diverse environment, and that includes race and ethnicity. So that was a very strong endorsement that the Supreme Court gave to U.S. higher education.
As I recall, it upheld racial preferences, or whatever they call them, in some cases and not in others. The University of Michigan Law School Affirmative Action Program was upheld.
Yes,
that was the
right.
specific. The Lani-Guinier, can, you know, people are worrying that the Supreme Court decisions expected by the end of next month could, in effect, reverse Brown versus Board of Education. But can Brown versus Board of Education, landmark that it was, be said to have worked? The numbers I've read say 14% of white students attend multiracial schools today, 40% of black and Latino students attend schools that are 90% minority. So has it even worked?
Well, that's a very complicated question because it really depends on what you mean by worked. I think that the Brown decision was extremely important and, in fact, a paradigm-shifting decision in terms of putting the question of racial equality on the national agenda. But the way in which we address that problem has evolved over time, and that's the moment at which we are now. Ted talked about whether some opponents of affirmative action are killing Brown because they are claiming that race consciousness equals racial discrimination. And then Lee talked about the fact that you have a commitment to diversity, not only as a remediation, but also as an affirmation of educational values in a democracy. And I think that our understanding of race and the work that race is doing in our country needs to evolve as well, so that we don't think about race simply in terms of Jim Crow and prejudice and bias, but we also think about the work that race does as a diagnostic tool, meaning that when we see things happening to people of color, it is often a sign, a means of telegraphing problems with the larger metrics that we're using. So for me, one of the questions when you say, is Brown working? I think we need to fine-tune the accommodations that we've been making to essentially to voluntary segregation that we affirm or that we support in the name of quote-unquote merit. So part of the problem in terms of higher education, for example, is that you have schools using tests and using other indicators that are actually proxies for wealth, calling it merit, mm-hmm. and then when this adversely affects blacks and Latinos, we say, well, we have to give them a racial preference in order to compensate for their inadequacy on our essentially wealth test. Well, this is also affecting poor whites, but we don't have a language for connecting race and class or testing, and so as a result, we get very confused by the effects that are showing up in terms of race, but are actually effects that are much more complicated in terms of the structure of our selection processes.
We're talking about the future of diversity in education with Harvard professor Lani-Guinier, Columbia University president Lee Bollinger, and Ted Shaw from the NAACP Defense and Education Fund. And I want to play for the three of you a clip of presidential hopeful Barack Obama from ABC This Week when he was asked about affirmative action.
I would like to think that if we make good decisions and we invest in early childhood education, improved K through 12, if we have done what needs to be done to ensure that kids who are qualified to go to college can afford it, that affirmative action becomes a diminishing tool for us to achieve racial equality in this society.
Ted Shaw, that clip has gotten a lot of attention for Barack Obama using the phrase diminishing tool and affirmative action in the same breath. Do you have a reaction to that?
Well, that clip merits a a longer discussion, but my reaction is that, look, if we could get beyond the issues of race, and I agree with all that Lonnie has said, but if we could get beyond the issues of race, contrary to what our adversaries say, we don't have any investment in keeping the issue of race alive, but this has been America's greatest dilemma. And we're not there yet. Race remains a powerful marker of inequality in so many ways, in education and in health and criminal justice, so it's across the board. The reality is that we're not there yet. Do we want to be there? Do we want it to be a diminishing tool, it being affirmative action? Yes. But I view affirmative action as, in its purest form, simply taking action positively to address continuing racial inequality. And anybody with eyes to see or ears to listen knows that racial inequality remains a fact of life, and it is still rooted, as even President Bush acknowledged in the aftermath of Katrina, in our history.
Well, Tetra, let me follow up with you, because Obama is seen by some as representing generational change on how these issues are viewed. And I gather that you've announced your resignation from the Legal Defense Fund. In fact, I understand that you're on your way at the moment to the funeral of Yolanda King, Dr. King's daughter. But is it reading too much into it to say that we're seeing a generational shift in views towards achieving civil rights?
Well, you know, change is inevitable, and we are, in fact, seeing a shift in generations, and that's appropriate. But, you know, this issue is going to remain with the next generation to address, and frankly, I think passing the baton to the next generation is important. I'm not going to leave these issues. They'll be with me all of my life, and I'm just leaving my job as head of the Legal Defense Fund next year sometime. But change is inevitable, and these issues are going to remain with us for quite some time.
But could I just jump in, because
Dr.
I
Grenier,
think it's
go ahead.
Really important to take Barack's comments literally. He says affirmative action is a diminishing tool. He doesn't say that redressing racial inequality is a diminishing problem. And I think that there's a big difference between the tools that you use to address a problem and your understanding that there is still a problem.
So what would be some alternative tools?
Well, I think the Texas 10% plan is an alternative way of addressing the issue of diversity in higher education.
The top 10% of any graduating high school class automatically gets admission to the state universities.
That's right.
And since schools are segregated, that would mean a lot of black kids.
Well, and the reason schools are segregated is because there is still a problem with racial inequality. So the point is, we have to be flexible about the tools we use, but we have to be righteous about our understanding that there is still a problem.
And you have a book coming out on meritocracy. I hereby invite you back for a proper book interview when the time is right.
Well, thank you.
I guess you were getting at some of that before, on how meritocracy is perceived by the public as opposed to what you think it really is.
Right, and meritocracy has this iconic status as being objective and fair, when in fact it's reproducing a social oligarchy. And the visible sign of this is the effect it's having on blacks and Latinos, but there are invisible signs in terms of the effect it's having on poor and rural whites.
Our time is going to run out so quickly. Lee Bollinger, as president of Columbia University, how do you see the future of diversity at your school, given what tools are available to you and what may cease to be available under the law, including any coming Supreme Court rulings?
Well, I guess I want to say several things very quickly. I think that what American higher education, both private and public universities, have achieved over the past 50 years, following upon Brown and the ideal of integrating American society and making people more comfortable across racial, ethnic, and other lines, is really a great achievement. And it would be an enormous tragedy if that were abandoned. And
we have 20 seconds left for how it applies at Columbia.
It is diverse. It will continue to be diverse. Over 20% of the entering class for 2007 are minorities, and the class is something that continues to be. There's a commitment across the country and at Columbia to diversity.
Columbia President Lee Bollinger, Harvard Law Professor Lonnie Grenier, Ted Shaw from the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. They will all be taking part in a discussion tonight on the future of diversity in education. More information on that conference, if you want to attend, is available on our show page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you all so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.